Welcome to the Reader's Roundtable edition of Cattlecast with Jessica Trotter, Mari Garza, and Cheryl Lindemann.
Welcome back to Reader's Roundtable edition of Cattlecast. I'm Jessica Trotter, and we have a special segment today in celebration of March's Reading Month, where Mari Garza will be talking books with Lynn Harper, head librarian at our Dansville Library Branch, and Kathy Zako, youth services librarian at our Lansing Libraries. But first, Cheryl and I are going to talk and just sort of chat about what we're reading, what we're excited about this month. So, and you'd think we were, you know, going to stay away from children's topics because Maddie's going to cover that in the next segment, but we can't do that either. So, yeah. You know, we'll kind of bounce around a little all over the place, I think, with our picks this month. It is very nice to talk with you, Cheryl.
It is very nice.
Go ahead.
It's been a year since we were, this is it. This marks the year anniversary of our recording of our last day, our last sort of normal week in the office. I don't know if I'd call it normal, but
it wasn't very normal, but yes. Yeah.
Yeah. That Friday was my last true day, true full day. So yeah. So this is sort of a momentous kind of feeling to this day, I think, for a lot of people.
Yeah. It's been interesting. Kind of, there's been a lot of looking around and taking stock and grieving. I mean, or on the other hand, celebrating that the people that have made it and are doing okay-ish. You know, I don't know if we actually were just talking about the Atlantic article.
Yeah.
About sort of people who are kind of hitting that wave of pandemic is sort of affecting them differently now, and it's hard to work around.
Yeah. And it's funny because we had a conversation and then I read the article. I almost sent it to Jessica and then Jessica sent it to me this morning. So it's very funny. We're on the same wavelength with this, aren't we?
Well, yeah. And I'd actually just gotten, when I found it, I'm in a chat with friends from college and that's totally echoed exactly what we were talking about in the chat. And it was not 15 minutes later that I found that article for the first time. We can put the notes, link for it in the show notes.
Yes.
It's by Ellen Cushing, though.
Something about late pandemic.
But yes, March is reading month.
Yeah, so it's also time to sort of take stock. We've had a year of reading, you know, year of reading kind of home.
Ish.
And yeah, a year of reading very differently. You know, those months where the library was closed to physical book checkout, really trying to direct our reading to our TBR piles at home or what we had still checked out, what we had, you know, using our e-material or e-resources more perhaps than we had been in the past.
Mm-hmm.
And then thinking about, I was trying to think about a theme for my books when I come into this, and a theme always emerges. And this one's kind of funny to me. My theme for these three books, because they have very little in common with each other, is that these are books I was waiting for a long time.
Yep.
Some, you know, that had that really early push, but then you had to wait for publication. That counts for one of them. Another one had a really long hold list because it's a beloved garden author. And the others are a reprint of a 2012 book, but it just had a long wait to get to it too. It could have even been put off publication. That might've been the problem with that one. So these were all three that I really wanted to talk about here and I had been waiting for a while, so.
Okay, do you want to start with one of them?
My thin thread. Yeah. I'll start with Dog Flowers by Danielle Geller. And this is a memoir. And this is one that I waited for a really long time. And it's a challenging memoir to sum up easily. I've brought a few of those to the podcast. I really, as listeners could probably tell, I really love memoir. And so I talk about them quite a bit on the podcast here, but this one's trickier to easily sum up. But a couple things that I can say about it. And first, I wanted to mention a bit of a content warning. We don't do that a lot here, but especially given that we have a lot of children's books in the second part of our program today. I wanted to mention there a little content warning. This is a really difficult memoir. It includes drug and alcohol abuse, physical abuse, sexual abuse, mental illness, and suicide. So this is not a light memoir at all. No, and it is. I just wanted to put that out there, you know, as just a notice about the book. This is a beautifully crafted and uniquely crafted memoirs. Danielle Geller addresses intergenerational trauma and addresses grief in an extremely unique way. One of the things I can say about this book is a very non-linear memoir. So people who want that tidy beginning and that tidy resolution at the end will not find that here, but they'll find something very different, something very honest, and beautifully crafted. And what Danielle Geller did in this book is she has a narrative of her life and her family's life and in her moments from her life. But she also pulled from a suitcase that was left over after her mother died, journals, photographs, and letters, and pieces those into the book with captions. And Danielle Geller actually has an archival degree, a librarian degree in archives. And so it has made a bit of an archive, not fully, but a bit of an archive of her mother's life. And she's trying to piece together a narrative of her mother's life through that, through the story. She is a member of the Navajo Nation, and that is a piece of the story. But this is not the memoir. This is the best way I can say about this book. This is not the memoir you think it's going to be. And she addresses that in some of the interviews that I read of her after reading this book. It's about the cyclical patterns of abuse and addiction. And it's about how, if you grow up in that, how do you find that thread of your own life? How do you follow your own path when you have really nobody to model a path after? No one led ahead and said, this is how we do this, right? And so she had to find her own path through this trauma and out the other side. It's a lot of really excellent symbolism in here. Birds feature prominently. She's a birder, weaving, and the story really is woven. And it reminds me in some ways of the way that Louise Erdrich weaves her stories, and often they're very nonlinear.
Okay.
So I thought, I remember last April I read a quote from N. Scott Momaday, and it was, anything is bearable if you can make a story of it. Hmm. And I think that this is one of those memoirs that's really, it's bearing witness to someone's story.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it is. It's not it's not necessarily trying to tell this pretty story of redemption. It's trying to tell the story, the way it is, the way that she felt it. In the story, she talks about how her sister at times, her sister's an addict and they have a very difficult relationship. And her sister said sometimes, can't you just make that fiction, this memoir that you're writing? And Danielle Geller says, writing the truth or my understanding of it is the only path I can see through the weeds. And I think that really sums up what this book is about that path. About this really difficult path. I'm really glad that I read this book. And how about you, Jessica?
So that in some ways is focusing on dealing with intergenerational grief and grief of the moment of, you know, that trying to figure her mother out on a level.
Yeah.
We were talking about this and it brought to mind one I didn't realize I never talked about on the podcast. And that's actually one of the Michigan Notable books from this year. It's Grief's Country, A Memoir in Pieces by Gail Griffin. This was kind of a surprise for me. I wasn't familiar with her. I know has a long career in the state, but this is a short memoir-ish. It's not really the story of a relationship, but the start of it is that after a long relationship, but only 4 months of marriage, Gail's husband falls into the Manistee River and drowns. And it's not their story per se, those parts of that do come out in the book. It's really a very thoughtful and intimate look at grief Mm-hmm. And it's mental and physical effects. And it's, you know, it's called Grief's Country, and and I really feel like Griffin is trying to wend her way through this very unfamiliar and strange new world.
Mm-hmm.
And find its way back. And I think when we were reading it, because I am on the notable committee, for me personally, it kind of goes back to this year, given the tremendous losses of the year.
Yeah.
I really felt like this was one that hit a chord with me. Because there's no right way to get through the grief that we've been dealing with.
Right.
And see, you know, we with the books, you know, like your book and like this book, everybody approaches it differently. Some people feel very much the need to lean in
mm-hmm.
to those stories and try and find something in them for themselves that way. Some people will run for some stories like this, you know,
yes.
or, you know, or dog flowers. It's,
yeah,
I think you have to kind of find what works for you in these sorts of things, but it's been useful for me to do some of the leaning in and you know, experience those things with the writer.
Yes, I agree. And that's interesting that when we were talking about this podcast, that we both really came up with two books about grief at this time on this date, really.
Yeah.
Something I didn't mention that I thought of when you were talking about grief and the is that Danielle Geller refers to her grief as being ghost sick. That she says, I was truly sort of possessed or haunted by her mother. Mm-hmm. She said she'd been grieving her mother her whole life. Her mother was not a strong and stable presence in her life at all. And so the grief was always there, but now this was sort of a haunting, especially with these artifacts left over.
Mm-hmm.
And sadly, since in this very difficult year, the author also lost her father. That's not even in this book.
Right.
Yeah. So, but yeah, that leaning in, we've talked about that before, you know, even with horror, you know, we talked about, you know, some of us, so interesting as readers, what can we lean into and what we totally can't?
Yes.
And how that varies from person to person, and it's not predictable. It's really fascinating to me.
Well, and it's also not all in or all out either. I mean, I may jump down and say, okay, I'm going to do this one, but I need, you know, and this isn't actually the case, but you know, I need a cozy or a romance or something. I'm just trying to think of what people tend to think of as a light read. And it's not necessarily that's what I'm looking for. It may be, and that's actually something else we plan to talk about today. It may be something, it's different for every person what the other side is.
Yeah. What is that comfort read for somebody?
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, why can some people just skim through true crime and other people never touch true crime or you know, cinema too, horror movies or documentaries.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
I can do a difficult documentary, but I can't touch a horror movie, you know, mm-hmm. that sort of thing. So yeah, why? And it's so interesting. And that's why it's just so wonderful during March is Reading Month to really focus on this, just this huge, rich body of literature out there. It just really is something for everybody.
Oh yeah, definitely.
I know that we'll talk about kids' books later and appeal, but it's always hard when children are little because sometimes they just haven't hit what they love yet. You know, just like we don't as adults. I even tell my daughter that, you know, I don't love all the books I read either. So don't start to think you don't like reading to some degree because you don't like some of these books. They just haven't hit you right. You know, you'll find the right thing and they do.
Mm-hmm. And you don't have to finish. I just have to say that. You don't have to. If you feel that you absolutely need to, that's one thing. But just know we don't expect you to finish everything you start. I definitely do not finish everything I start.
No, there's just way too much out there to do that. There's just so much out there. On that note with lighter reading, you know, this time of year for me, it's March, snowdrops are coming up, crocuses in the front garden bed. I'm really thinking gardening. So going the totally opposite direction of dog flowers, except for the unique title, which mentions flowers. My next pick is A Year at Brandywine Cottage, Six Seasons of Beauty, Bounty, and Blooms by David Culp. And he wrote a beloved garden book called The Layered Garden about his garden. And this is a second book. And it follows the calendar year. And it goes, you know, starts in the beginning of the year and then goes all the way through winter. And it is really a story through a lot of text. A lot of narrative, really interesting, fun text, and then a lot of plant identification, plant details, you know, garden zones, you know, different specifics to plants. Mm-hmm. But it's a 30-year garden that he's built with his partner, and just this beautiful, it's the story of the love of this place. You know, they bought the farmhouse, they bought the land. It's really not that big, but it looks huge. Mm-hmm. And it just the book takes you through each month, focuses on some plant varieties, some tips, some amazing looking recipes, just delicious stuff. Walnut cookies is one that I've marked to try, but it's inspiring. Almost every review I saw of this book is just everybody, it hit around a time when everybody wanted to see plants and gardens.
Yeah.
And
yes,
it's just full of inspiration. And also has an ecological perspective about how our small garden spaces, even if they're a pot, you know, whatever it is, can enrich the air that we breathe and enrich our environments and create better ecosystems for wildlife and therefore just for the health of the planet. So there's that piece of this book too, which is really, really fantastic.
Very cool.
Yeah. So definitely a great pick for March.
Okay.
And it was worth the wait.
All right.
How about you?
Well, I'm going to go another direction as well. So I want to talk about The Conductors by Nicole Glover. It's a genre bending mix. And it's something I really wish I had read sooner because it's one of those things I would have voted for library reads. Ah. But it made the top 10 for March. So, and I think it just came out this week. So the story spark for Glover was she was kind of speculating what would happen if you kind of combine the Underground Railroad stories, historical stories with magic users, which happens in two small degrees in like things like Colson Whitehead's Underground Railroad or Ta-Nehisi Coates' book as well. But this is a full-on fantasy magic system applied to reconstruction in antebellum American history. But it's more than that because it's really, it looks at, it's a couple of storylines. It is both the present day in reconstruction, Hetty and Benji Rhodes kind of solve problems in Philadelphia. They are investigators, particularly with a magical bent to them, their cases, but they're mainly out to protect the African-American community in Philadelphia as much as they possibly can. But prior to that, up through the war, they were conductors on the Underground Railroad. There's a set of flashback storylines that sort of takes you through how they met this cast of characters that have now, that are their immediate community in Philadelphia. And it's just, it's really, the mystery is very good. The coming out of slavery and trying to find a place in freedom, trying to work through the politics of all of Reconstruction. She deals with it all really well and in not a heavy way. So it's it's going to become a mystery series that I really want to keep following. So I was really excited, and I really wish I'd picked it up sooner, but again, I've had reading issues. So it was just one of those things I kept kind of picking up and putting down. And again, I say, you can put it down. It might totally work for you on the next try if you want to go back to it. And this is one of those, I'm really enjoying, I've really enjoyed it. It's very good. And I do know that there is a sequel coming out in November already. So it really is meant to be kind of a mystery, sort of fantasy mystery series.
Oh, wow. Excellent.
So I'm very excited about that one.
Sounds very good.
Do you want to do one more?
Yeah, one more. And it kind of leads into the Children's Marches Reading Month discussion. This one is, I mentioned a little bit in the beginning, it's called The Range Eternal, and it's by Louise Erdrich, paintings by Steve E. Johnson and Lou Fancher. And it was published originally in 2002, and it was reprinted this year. And I do not remember this book back then, so it was really new to me now. And this is just a beautiful story about the range eternal, which is interpreted, you know, a couple different ways in the story. I thought it was about, you know, the range in the West, and it is about that, and you know, buffalo herds and that sort of thing. It's actually set in the in a home in the Turtle Mountains, and it literally is referring first to a range, a stove, an old cook stove, an old wood burning stove. And the brand was the Range Eternal. And the story was actually inspired by Louise Erdrich's mother and her grandparents' home, going to the Turtle Mountain Reservation in North Dakota and seeing this big stove. And her mother always talked about how much the stove meant to her as a child. And this book was sort of written as a gift by Louise Erdrich for her mother. And it just follows how this stove is really sort of a character in the home. It keeps them warm. It keeps away the Wendigo, which is the spirit, the dark spirit of winter that's so terrifying to her. They heat up these potatoes that they take out as a, you know, out to school as a snack to eat. But it also is just sort of the center of the home. And when they look in the flames, they look inside of it, they imagine as a family, and they can see buffalo herds. They can see horses running on the range. And then, of course, you know, the main character, the daughter, grows up and she goes on and moves to a city and has a normal stove. But she's missing something. She's missing that sort of hearth. And she purchases an old range from an antique store and installs it in her home and brings that experience that she had in childhood to her son. And it's just really beautiful, very symbolic, very warm. And a great introduction to Erdrich's writing for young children. It was a linear story, but it's very symbolic and just really lovely. So wanted to bring that one today. And I was really glad that I took this one home and read it. My daughter really enjoyed it too.
That's great. Actually, I wasn't familiar with that one either from before. Yeah.
I wasn't so either, which I don't know why. Yeah.
Well, I'm going to slip in one more. I know yours was a great kind of transition one, but I still want to say that one of the other ones I read this earlier this year was Remote Control.
Oh yeah.
By Nnedi Okorafor. It's a tour novella, as a lot of her work is. And it's the experiences of a young girl, and she's 7, when something happens, and you're not entirely clear as to whether it's science fictional or fantastic or both. Nnedi Okorafor is an African futurist as opposed to Afrofuturism. She is writing very much about Africa. And mixing African folklore and African science fiction. And this is just, there's an eruption that changes her. She's only 7 years old at the time. She, from then on, is known as the adopted daughter of death.
Oh.
And she wanders through Ghana with that kind of over her head, not necessarily trying to figure out what happened to her for the most part, until something happens that makes her, she's sort of chasing something. Something is pulling her along. And when she finally kind of figures out what that is, she does want answers a little bit more, but it's just a really neat short tale. And it blends science fiction and fantasy really well. Mm. So it, and a lot of her work, like Binti is another one of her mm-hmm. Theories, are kind of that borderline between, a lot of it can be read by older kids, by teens, and I think they would love them. And this is another one of those. She's just a great writer. So I just wanted to get that one in there too.
Yeah.
This has been fun. It's cool just to sit and talk books. It's always cool just to sit and talk books. But we're going to wrap up, and our next segment, Mari, Lynn, and Kathy are going to be chatting about March's Reading Month and children's literacy. So stay tuned.
Welcome, Kathy and Lynn. It's so nice to have you on the podcast this month. Kathy Zako is one of our youth services librarian at our Lansing branches. And we have three branches in Lansing. And Lynn Harper is the head librarian at our Dansville branch. I'm happy to have you both because March is Reading Month. And I know both of you have kids and you practice reading every day. So I'm just really happy to have you guys. Welcome.
Thanks. Thanks for having us.
Oh, you're welcome. I know you both have kids at home and you practice reading every day. So I just wanted to ask you a little bit about what kind of things you do in your home. Kathy, let's start with you. Do you have any routine that's special for you and your daughter? And is there any way that you're celebrating Reading Month this month?
Sure. My daughter's school has a reading calendar that's similar to the one that Cattle has. And so for the month of March, we try to do different activities throughout the week from both of the calendars. So today was read a joke day. and other than that, we read every night together and try to get her to practice her reading. And then we read to her after as a little reward. And right now we're reading Charlotte's Web. We're almost done with Charlotte's Web.
Cool. Very cool. Do you have a book that you want to recommend maybe that you've either read with your daughter besides Charlotte's Web? Another one?
I don't know. There's so many. Her current favorite is the Emily Winsnap series.
Okay.
So we just finished book two on that. And so she's excited to get back to that after we read Charlotte's Web.
Okay. So cool. Very cool. Well, we do have a March's Reading Month calendar. It's on our website. If you just go to kettle.org, you'd be able to find that under the kids and parents link. But every day there is an activity that you can do together with your kids. And one of those activities is actually to read a nonfiction book about anything or anyone. And one of the books that I want to recommend is Honeybee. By Candace Fleming, and it's illustrated by Eric Roman. It's actually Honeybee, the Busy Life of Apis Mellifera. And it's actually the 2021 Robert Siebert Informational Medal book this year. And it's a beautifully illustrated book about the life cycle of the very supremely devoted and tremendous worker being the honeybee. It's kind of laid out in the form of a poem, but the illustrations are just, wow, jaw-dropping, eye-popping. They're so big. And you really get to learn a lot about, you know, the work that a honeybee does to clean the hive, to build a comb or a wax comb, and then, you know, finally going out to look for nectar. I really liked all the little facts that I learned, an average bee visits like 30,000 flowers and collects nectar to make like just 1/12 of a teaspoon of honeybee. Of a honey. So it was just really interesting. I highly recommend it. It's kind of more on the like the second to third grade level. A lot of words on the page, but very, very stunning. And I think this is a great title for repeated reading. And speaking of, I just really want to say, parents and caregivers, it's so totally great, okay, to keep reading the same books over and over. You get so many opportunities to, you know, practice new words and review their meanings together. So Lynn, please tell us about your family and, you know, reading practices you have with your girls.
Yes. Yeah, so I have two daughters that are in elementary school. And when, especially when they were younger, we would do, I love these activities in the early learning calendar because I consider a lot of them little like hacks, like things that you can just add into your everyday routine. So one example of something that might be in the calendar that we used to do is during bath time when they're playing, we would like spray shaving cream on the side of the tub. And I might say to them, oh, let's, you know, can you draw a circle when they're really little? Can you draw a line? And as they get older, we would say, I'd say, can you draw a letter T for me? I'll draw one and then you copy me. And so just finding ways to integrate literacy into stuff you're already doing with your kids. And it can be really fun and you don't have to like sit and do drills with flashcards all the time. It can just, you can build it into stuff you're already doing. So they're a little older than that now. So some of the things we do now, like I like to, I'll admit I do a lot of my own personal reading on a device. I do a lot of my fiction reading. I use the library digital resources like Overdrive and Hoopla. So to show my kids that I am actually reading on my phone and not just playing games all the time. I like to find articles that they would be interested in. They're really into science. So like sometimes at dinner time, I'll say, hey, look, I found this really interesting article about the Mars rover and I'll read it aloud to them. Nice. Or the other day I read aloud an article about they discovered some fossils in Utah for the Utah Raptor. And so I read that aloud to them and that introduces a lot of new vocabulary to them, you know, scientific words. And it just, you know, it's really good for kids, even older kids who can read independently to listen to somebody reading aloud because it helps them learn how to pace their reading. And how to pronounce new words. And even as adults, sometimes we have to slow down a little bit to sound out a word we're not familiar with. So we're just modeling that for them when we read aloud to them.
That is awesome. Wow. And thank you for bringing up the early learning calendar. That is separate from the March's Reading Month calendar, but you'll also find that on our website. We have actually two types of literacy calendars. One is an early learning calendar that is like just 12 months of activities for every day. And then a family literacy calendar, which is kind of more for the kindergarten to first grade level. And the early calendars for preschool or zero to preschoolish. Really good resources on our website. Lynn, do you have a book that you want to recommend for us?
Sure. I'm going to start out with a picture book. And this picture book is called Interstellar Cinderella, and the author is Deborah Underwood, and it's illustrated by Meg Hunt. And the reason why I like this book is it has really great, bold graphics. It has really interesting language in it. Like the first line of the book is, "Once upon a planetoid, amid her tools and sprockets, a girl named Cinderella dreamed of fixing fancy rockets." So, you know, planetoid, that's a different kind of word, sprockets. I like the storyline in that it's a story a lot of kids are familiar with Cinderella, but this is a sort of a retelling of it. This is an outer space setting. This is Cinderella, who is a mechanic. And this traditional story sort of gets flipped on its head in that she sort of like saves herself and actually kind of saves a prince too. So I also think that's important that it's a book that shows a different role for a female than a traditional role. And it's great to expose boys and girls to different roles for girls and women. Okay. So it's just a really fun read.
Great. Thank you. Kathy, do you have a book that you would like to recommend?
Sure. I have one called Fox Explores the Night. It's by Martin Jenkins. And it's part of a series called a First Science Storybook series. And it's good for grades, for like preschoolers to up to second grade. This is a story about a fox who wakes up from her den hungry, but it's too bright outside. The sun's still out. So she's going to wait until it's dark before she goes out to explore the town and look for food. So throughout this book, she encounters different light sources like the sun and the moon and headlights from a car and a campfire. So it's a nice introduction to science of light and dark. And it reads like a picture book. It's got simple text and really beautiful illustrations. And I like it at the beginning and at the end of the book, it offers some suggestions for parents on how to discuss these different science concepts with them. And it also suggests a little science experiment you can do outside with shadows. Okay. So it's just it's a good sort of first look at different science concepts for young readers.
Yeah. Neat. I think I am familiar with that book. It does have lots of ideas for going out together with, you know, your parent and mm-hmm. trying out all these different things with the shadows and light and things. That's neat. Very cool. Thank you. I have another book that I would like to recommend. It's also a picture book. Where it is a picture book, it's The Camping Trip by Jennifer K. Mann. And I just reread it last night. I love this book because it is about a girl who isn't very familiar with the outdoors or really with like spending the night outdoors. So her aunt and her cousin invite her to go camping. And she's a city girl, which I could really identify with because I grew up in the city and didn't do much camping in my childhood at all. But it just, it goes through like all the things that kind of like freak her out a little bit, you know, going into the swimming in the lake, which she loves to do in the pool, but she sees fish in the lake and just how you're not too sure if the fish are going to nibble at your feet or not. And it's just beautiful. And the illustrations, Jennifer Mann also does the illustrations and they're just really beautiful. I mean, it makes you want to go camping really, or go on a nice hike. It's kind of laid out on some spreads, like kind of like a graphic novel, but not exactly, but like a comic where you would see little bubbles. But it's just a beautiful, beautiful picture book celebrating the outdoors, celebrating trying new things, you know, realizing how much work it is to pack up your stuff and take it out somewhere to a campsite and bringing it back. So I really, really love this book. And I can see this one as another repeated reading story. So, yeah. Lynn, do you have another book you want to recommend for us?
Yeah, so I'm switching gears from picture books and moving up to early readers, which are books that we categorize for children who are developing their reading skills, learning to read independently. And this is a really cute series called A Frog and a Dog Book. And the author is Janie Trassler, and this is published by Scholastic, and it's part of their Acorn line, which is all books for emerging readers.
Yes, very popular series.
So I really like these. We get a lot of questions in the library from parents. You know, my child is learning to read, and they're looking for suggestions. And these are really cute and colorful. They have cartoony characters. The layout is a little bit like a graphic novel in that there are word bubbles. There's lots of repetitive sounds. Like this book I'm looking at is called Go in a Boat. So it has that long O sound that's repeated frequently. Mm-hmm. So it makes it, you know, really just perfect for those kids who are just starting out. And there's three books in this, this little series, but then as they master this vocabulary, then there's more complex books in the other Acorn line. So I mean, I'm always, like I said, I'm always looking for books to recommend, and these have the really nice illustrations, which some phonics readers are a little lacking in that. So I think that these have mm-hmm. a high appeal to kids.
Cool. Very cool. Yeah, that is a really nice Nice series. And you can find those books in the catalog. Our call number would be ER, or standing, you know, for early reader or emergent reader. But they're often near the picture books in our branch libraries, which I know are closed right now. Sorry. But yeah, I just wanted to mention you can find those books in the catalog under ER. So, Kathy, tell us another title that you are interested in recommending.
Sure. This one is called The Best Friend Plan, and it's actually a chapter book, a beginning chapter book. It's a good one actually to transition between beginning readers and longer chapter books. The book itself is fairly short. It's about 70 pages or so, and the chapters are short as well. I think they're about maybe 10 pages. The font is large and there's a lot of white space on the page, and there's some nice illustrations throughout the book. This series is, well, this is the first in a series, The Adventures of Allie and Amy. So this one's about two best friends who live, they both live on the sixth floor, but in neighboring apartments. So it's really cute because it takes them the exact same amount of time to get from their apartment down to meet out front.
Okay.
So this particular book is about the first day of summer vacation, and they're very excited to spend the summer together, but then they realize one of them is going to go away for summer camp. So it's great though for like kindergartners to third grade or emerging readers. So it's a fun friendship story.
Okay. Neat. I think you also do a lot of reading of the Vox books with your daughter. Can you tell us about those and maybe one title that you have been reading?
Sure. Yeah, she really likes the Vox books a lot. What they are, it's a book, and then it comes with a part on there that makes it a read-along. So there's a speaker on there so you can listen together with your child, or there's a headphone jack so they can listen to it quietly by themselves. So the particular one I have is called Warthogs and Banded Mongoose, but there's lots of animal books. The readers, the beginning readers, are nonfiction. And yeah, I just like them. She likes to listen to them and then read along. And I just think that they help those kids who maybe struggle with reading, and it gives them a little added confidence to try to read a book after they've heard it a couple times.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we have a nice large collection. We have picture books and then these beginning readers.
Yes.
Books. Cool. And those are good for, probably kindergarten to third grade.
Okay. Yeah. That is a really great collection. I order that collection, and I know we have like 58 new titles that just came in not long ago. So they will be out soon, and you can find those in the catalog also under BMP3, and you'll see that whole list under our OPAC or catalog. The other title that I was thinking of wanting to recommend is that I love history, and especially learning about people I've not heard about. And I'm recommending a book called A Super Sticky Mistake: The Story of How Harry Coover Accidentally Invented Super Glue. And this is by Allison and Ria Zai. And, you know, this is a very simple biography, picture book biography. It's quick to read. I would say that it's not like heavy on specific facts, but you learn about this man who mistakenly invented super glue, which I don't think a whole lot of children probably use because it is a little dangerous on your fingers. But I know kids are familiar with glue because they've often used it with crafts. But this man was trying to invent a plastic in the 1930s. And he inadvertently, let me see if I can pronounce the word. He's a chemist. And he invented something. He was working with something called cyana. Let me see if I can find it here. Cyana acrylate. And in the book, the material is colored pink, but mostly so that you can see it. But, you know, in reality, it's a clear clear liquid. And you just learn these little things that he went through, and, you know, makes you think about, like, you know, when you make a mistake and it actually turns out to be really super cool, it's really neat. And he goes throughout the story. Apparently he liked to say yabba dabba do or yabba dabba yay, all sorts of things. And one thing I noted at the very end is that he was awarded the National Medal of Technology and Innovation. I think this was in 2009, maybe. And he was awarded that medal by President Obama. That isn't specifically mentioned in the book. It just, you know, shows a picture of him with the president. But I just thought it was a really neat biography. Again, like, you know, for the first through third grade level, I think. Nice. I know kids do get some projects or school projects related to biographies. Yeah. Lynn, do you have one more title for us?
Yes. So my last title is a graphic novel. And I know sometimes parents and adults are concerned that graphic novels aren't as, they're not as complex for kids to read as a traditional chapter book, but I want to dispel that myth for anybody who worries about graphic novels. Graphic novels have a lot going on. While they don't always have a lot of text on the page, kids have to decode how the text is laid out on the page if they have to read across, you know, from left to right, or sometimes the text, one line is below the next line, or sometimes it goes across both pages, which we call a spread. So they have to figure out, what is the order of the text? How's it laid out in the book? And then a lot of the story is told through the pictures too. So they have to get the clues from the pictures to really understand the story. So they're actually kind of complex, even though they can look deceivingly simple. And the one I want to share today is called Bologna and Friends by Greg Pizzoli.
I love that series.
It's just really, you just look at it and it just looks fun. It's really bright and colorful, cartoony illustrations, kind of in the style of Mo Willems, but yep. And it's friendship stories. And my favorite character is this little rabbit, and his name is Crabbit. And if the name doesn't tell you that he's grumpy, then his expression will tell you that he's just like the grumpy downer of the group, which just adds some humor to the story. But these books are nice too, in that they're laid out into four sections. So they are kind of like a chapter book in that there's four separate little storylines within the book. And I believe there's a new title that is coming out this year in this series. So yeah, these are really fun and an enjoyable read for kids who are independent readers, probably second or third grade.
Okay. Great.
And I just want to put out a plug too. I know sometimes parents get stuck on knowing, what should my kid read next? They just finished, you know, a series and they don't know where to go with it. And we have resources for that. You know, I know, especially now when people can't come in and browse, it's even harder. We have Book Sleuth PI on the library website where an adult or a kid can go on and submit information about books they've liked to read, books they haven't liked to read. And youth services staff are going to look at that information and they're going to make a customized recommendation for your preferences. And I have a friend who recently did that for her kids, and she said they loved the recommendations that they got. So, you know, we're here for you. Even when you can't come in our buildings, we're going to help you find your kid's next great book.
Thank you very much for giving that plug. Yes, we do a lot. I mean, we will email you back. We also do the Book Sleuth Live event, but you can submit that. So this has been very interesting. I really appreciated hearing both of you talk about the collections at Cattle, but also the kind of things you do at home with your family. So thank you. That's it. March is reading month. I hope everyone is out there celebrating and finding new books, rereading, just looking at the pictures if you need to. And, you know, finding all that new vocabulary. I think reading is a really fun thing to do, both obviously as a kid, but as an adult as well. So thank you, Lynn. Thank you, Kathy, for being on today.
Sure. Thanks for having me.
All right. You've been listening to the Readers Roundtable podcast at Capital Area District Libraries. Thanks for listening.
Hi, it's Sherry Jones with some good news. Capital Area District Libraries has reopened with contactless item pickup. Reserve items by placing a hold online or by calling a branch, then just schedule a time for pickup.
Member and staff safety is the number one priority, so cattle will remain in compliance with CDC guidelines. For details about their contactless service, safety measures, and more, visit the library's website at cadl.org.